Hello, and welcome to Switchblade Sisters, the podcast where women get together to slice and dice our favorite action and genre films. Every week here on the podcast, we invite a new female filmmaker, a writer, director, actor, producer, and we talk in depth about their favorite genre film, maybe one that influenced their own work. I'm film critic Katie Walsh, and today we have actress, host, writer, and horror maven Clark Wolf.
Yay!
Welcome, Clark.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is such a treat.
This is so exciting to have you here. A little bit about Clark. Actress, host, and writer Clark Wolf is one of the most well-known female voices in the horror community. Her thoughts on the genre have been read and seen on Nerdist, Collider, Sci-Fi, IMDb, and more. She recently appeared in Fangoria's Satanic Panic, directed by Chelsea Stardust, another Switchblade Sister guest, and the acclaimed documentary Memory, The Origins of Alien. She can next be seen opposite Barbara Crampton, another one of our Switchblade Sisters, in the holiday horror anthology Deathcember. Holiday horror anthology, tongue twister.
I know, right? Every time I promote it, I'm like, or mention it, it's definitely like, you just got to get in the habit.
Horror day, holiday anthology, yes. So, Clark, today you have chosen my personal horror gateway drug, Wes Craven's Scream.
Yay.
So why did you choose Scream?
This movie has had such a big impact on me over the years. I have probably taken notes on this movie specifically more than any other movie that I can think of, just because it comes up in important conversation or on podcasts or whatever, or looking at it from a writing perspective. But for me, this was a movie that came out when I was a little too young to see it, but I wanted to know everything about it. And my best friend, Ginny, she got to see it, so she told me all the secrets, and she told me who the killers were because I asked. Mm-hmm. Normally, I do not like to know the secrets before I go in, but when I was a kid, I did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this was a movie that for sure, part of the reason that I love genre so much and genre storytelling so much is because I believe that what you're afraid of or what scares you says a lot about a person, about a society, about a place and time. Mm-hmm. And so this movie really resonated with people. And I think there is so much going on beneath the surface that really occurred to me like later in high school, early college, when I was studying film a little more closely.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I have watched this movie, I think that it holds up. I mean, the one example that I always give is they keep calling the phones cellulars.
I know, cellular telephones.
Yeah. So he keeps saying, like, we cloned his cellular or the cellular. What are you doing with a cellular? And it's like, it's very silly. But aside from that, I feel like this movie feels very contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very meaningful for me in all of those ways. And honestly, I am not a slasher fan.
Wow.
I'm not at all. And it's, in fact, it's probably my least favorite horror subgenre.
Interesting.
But this movie is in my top five favorite horror movies of all time.
All right. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty of Scream, but I'm going to give a little synopsis first. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have seen Scream. But for those of you who haven't seen Scream, today's episode will contain spoilers, much like your friend spoiled it for you.
Yes.
But that shouldn't stop you from listening before you watch. Like we always say, it's not what happens, but how it happens that makes a movie worth watching. Still, if you want to pause this episode and watch it, now is your chance. Okay, so in 1996, Scream, written by Kevin Williamson, directed by Wes Craven, revitalized horror with its smart and snarky take on the slasher genre. The film opens with a little bit of a bait and switch. We all thought Drew Barrymore was the star of this movie, thanks to the poster. She plays Casey Becker, who receives a creepy phone call at home, and the mysterious caller asks her, "What's your favorite scary movie?" And then torments Casey with a deadly game of horror trivia.
Name the killer in Friday the 13th.
Jason! Jason! Jason!
I'm sorry. That's the wrong answer.
So Casey and her boyfriend Steve end up disemboweled on the front lawn, a grisly murder that rocks the small town of Woodsboro, which has already been rocked 1 year earlier, as we will come to find out, by the murder of Maureen Prescott, who's the mother of Sydney Prescott, played by Neve Campbell, who is our heroine, our final girl.
Only a year ago, Maureen Prescott, wife and mother, was found raped and murdered not far from this peaceful town square.
The killer, who they dub Ghostface because of his Halloween costume disguise, calls Sydney when she's home alone and then attacks her.
Nice try, Randy. Tell Tatum to hurry up, okay? Bye now.
If you hang up on me, you'll die just like your mother. Do you want to die, Sydney?
But of course she fights him off. She's very smart, very good.
Yes.
The little door move is very clutch in that moment.
Uh-huh.
When her boyfriend, Billy Loomis, played by Skeet Ulrich, suddenly arrives and drops a cellular telephone.
His cellular.
Sydney starts to suspect him, and he spends the night in jail, though he's eventually cleared through phone records. And the police start to suspect her father, Neil. Anyway, their school is absolutely out of control. I'm rewatching it. I was like, what is going on? People are like pranking in ghost face costumes. And the iconic principal, Himbry, played by Henry Winkler, who's one of my personal MVPs in
so
this movie.
Good.
He suspends school.
Due to the recent events that have occurred, effective immediately, all classes are suspended until further notice.
And of course, all the teens decide to throw a party at Stu's house. Stu is played by Matthew Lillard, he gives one of the most unhinged,
so good
horror movie performances I've ever seen, which is saying a lot.
I love it so much.
I'll be right back.
So at the party, video store clerk Randy, Jamie Kennedy, expounds on the rules of the horror genre and his scream queen, Jamie Lee Curtis.
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. For instance, number one, you can never have sex. Big no-no!
So, aggressive news personality Gail Weathers ingratiates herself with Deputy Dewey. This is Courtney Cox and David Arquette, obviously. They infiltrate the party. She sets up a little camera. And then Ghostface starts to claim a few more victims, including Tatum, played by Rose McGowan, who meets her doom on the wrong end of a garage door. Meanwhile, Sydney just upends all the rules of the final girl by having sex with Billy, who's then melodramatically stabbed by Ghostface. He has like an amazing death scene. So there's only a few people left in the house because all those hellion teens go off to look at the principal's body.
They found Principal Henry dead. He was gutted and hung from the goalpost on the football field.
What are we waiting for? Let's go over there before they pry him down.
So a distraught Sydney doesn't know who to trust. Suddenly, Billy is up and about. He survives. With a little bit of a nod to Psycho, he declares,
"We all go a little mad sometimes."
And reveals that he and Stu are the two murderers. They framed Cotton Weary, Liev Schreiber, for the murder of Sydney's mother, and they killed her due to an extramarital affair with Billy's father, which broke up his parents' relationship. After a lot of movie references and psychobabble, and with a key assist from her former nemesis, Gail Weathers.
I've got an ending for you. The reporter left for dead in the news van comes to. Stumbles on you two dipshits. Finds the gun, foils your plan, and saves the day.
I like that ending.
Sydney takes on her true final girl form and fights back, attacking Billy in a Ghostface costume and murdering Stu with the TV that is playing Halloween.
So good. So good.
Obviously, this movie revitalized horror in the 90s. It had become kind of a joke with all of the sequels, all of the direct-to-video, really lowbrow type of franchise, like, you know, installment number 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Kevin Williamson was really smart in realizing that the way to come at a smart revitalization of horror was to talk about the genre.
Yeah.
And to have Sydney in the beginning say, "Oh, I don't watch those movies. They're such an insult. Like, I know all the tropes."
Right.
It's really smart writing.
Yeah. And I also think that the idea, one thing that I love about this script, and honestly, I love about a lot of Wes Craven's better movies, is that they treat the audience as though they're smart.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it doesn't, like, it's not like too smart for its own good, but it also, you know, says, no, you'll keep up. You keep up with us. And you know, I think that trusting the audience with that and also trusting teenagers with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that so Wes Craven is my favorite of all the horror auteurs.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why is because he's always treated his characters with agency.
Yeah.
You know, like the teenagers often are the ones who know exactly what's going on and nobody listens to them. The grown-ups don't listen, you know,
right,
or whatever. And so I feel like that's so on display here. And I love a smart movie. And I love a smart movie that, like, really plays by its rules.
Yes.
It's such a well-written script.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I don't know that I ever, like, when I initially watched the film, there's so many big characters. Like, Tatum is so fun to watch. And Stu, who's just off the wall. And then I think Randy's, you know, for the horror fan, he's kind of like our way in. Like, yeah. He's savvy, he's knowing, he survives
yeah.
amazingly. But I think rewatching Scream when I rewatched it last night, and this was the first time I was really struck by Neve Campbell
mm-hmm.
and her performance. And last night I was like, oh no, she's really wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is that the last time I watched this movie, I was so moved and upset by the opening scene.
Oh my God.
Like,
Clark, it is insane. I was screaming on my couch. How many times have I seen this movie? Last night I had full-on goosebumps. I was screaming.
Yeah.
It's so effective.
It's real. I mean, it is well done for so many reasons, but I have to say that, like, Casey Becker, the character, last time I watched it, I legitimately teared up. It just,
oh, wow.
It made me really sad. I think I'm also as I get older, and I hear this about horror fans, like, when you have kids, your relationship to horror can change, or, you know, as you get older, you know, I tell this story all the time, but my relationship with Rosemary's Baby has changed so much the
right.
older that I get. I cannot make it out of watching that movie without crying because
mm-hmm.
it's so upsetting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's scary to me is not the devil. It's the whole idea of, you know, getting, you're just sold out by the people who are allegedly love you.
By that horrible relationship.
I mean, it's just awful. But I say that to say that, you know, I take brutal violence against young women especially really a lot harder now.
Yeah.
Especially when it's done well. And as you say, this sequence, I mean, it is just like you can see why this movie was a pop culture phenomenon because that opening scene is vicious.
It is. And I think one thing that I was thinking about last night while I was watching it is that in slasher movies, we almost never see parents.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
When her parents show up
yes.
and see her, it's like devastating.
They find her. Like, you're exactly right. I wrote that down, too.
Yeah.
Like, you never see the mom and dad finding the
yes.
body of their dead child. And we forget, too, because, like, okay, Scream definitely. This cast is perfection. I think he found.
Yes.
Wes has always found superstars. Like, he just is amazing. His taste in young talent is so impeccable. But these actors look like adults.
They do.
Because they are. And look, that is left over from a time like of the 80s where grown, you know, 30-year-olds are playing like teenagers,
yes.
and that's fine. But my bigger point is we, the audience, have to remember Casey's a child.
Right.
She's a child. She's home alone. Like, so if that, she's supposed to be, what, 16, 17? She, again, does not look 16 or 17.
Right.
But if you think about that, if you think about the idea of this girl, because I was really struck by, like, talk about the rules. I mean, Casey's boyfriend wasn't sneaking over for her. They weren't, like, you know, while her parents were out. Casey's not drinking. She's not sitting on the couch smoking weed, whatever. And by the way, if she was doing any of those things, like, she's good. She's allowed. She
right.
can. But my point is just as we deconstruct the rules, Casey's staying in watching a movie.
Yeah, she's very innocent.
And that is so, like, it's just the slow motion when she's run that
oh,
choice that he made to let you see her running and see the penetration. Like, this is something, again, that I love about Wes Craven is he is, I would argue, you know, consistently directs violence, you know, really. So it is upsetting and is jarring, but he always does it for a reason.
It's poetic.
Yes.
That scene. Like, the fact that Ghostface reaches around and stabs her in the heart,
yeah.
in the front. Like, you would, he's chasing behind her. You expect him to stab her in the back. And then she pulls the mask off, and we don't see who it is, but you see her
yes.
recognize. And it's like that little flicker of recognition is just such a little beautiful performance piece and, like, little button on that scene. Oh, it's so good.
Who do you think is in the mask? Who do you
oh.
think kills her? Because I did a lot of, so I know what I think,
mm-hmm.
but I did a lot of Googling, and the internet seems to seems to think differently, but I think they're wrong.
My gut instinct is Billy.
I think it's Billy, too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were saying they think it's Stu because you find out in the next scene that Casey and Stu dated for a minute, and she does have that flicker of recognition. Mm-hmm. And I think I read in one place that Kevin Williamson on Twitter said that in his mind it was Stu.
Okay.
But I think it's directed. I think it's Billy. I absolutely think it's Billy.
Well, also, Billy is the mastermind.
Yes.
And Stu just seems along for the ride. So Billy seems like he takes more pleasure out of killing people, and Stu is just like, sure, whatever.
Exactly.
All right, we are going to take a little break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about Scream with Clark Wolf.
Dead Pilots Society brings you exclusive readings of comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Patton Oswalt.
So the vampire from the future sleeps in the dude's studio during the day, and they hunt monsters at night. It's Blade meets the Odd Couple.
Adam Scott and Jane Levy.
Come on, Corey. She's too serious, too businessy. She doesn't know the hokey pokey.
Well, she'll learn what it's all about.
Busy Phillips and Dave Koechner.
Baby, this is family.
My Uncle Tell, who showed his wiener to Cinderella at Disneyland, is family. Do you want him staying with us?
He did stay with us for 3 months.
And he was a delight.
A new pilot every month, only on Dead Pilot Society for maximum fun.
Okay, we are back. We're talking about Scream, one of my favorite movies with the lovely Clark Wolf. It's an interesting thing to think, like what you were saying about before, like how horror as a genre helps us deal with fears that we have individually as a group. And I think Wes Craven has said stuff about that, about how he's like, let's get this out in the open.
In a safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea. The idea that you go into a theater and you exercise whatever fear or anger or anxiety you have, and then you have the luxury of walking out of there and you've actually done something for yourself.
Yeah, it's cathartic.
Absolutely.
So you're a writer, a screenwriter, and an actress, and I'm curious, when you were taking notes on Scream, what were you taking notes on?
Oh my God. Well, so for me, I think that there's a lot to be learned from movies that you think are effective and then breaking down why you think they are effective.
Right.
And it could be different for everybody. You know, I think, but for me, what I watch some, if I'm writing a slasher movie and I watch, you know, Bob Clark's Black Christmas or I watch Scream, those are movies that I'm just like, How did they do what they do? Why is this hitting me in a way that I'm saying, okay, this is effective? And so, this movie, okay, so my kind of intense theory and
let's get all the theories.
Yeah. I mean, or connecting the dots, rather. The reason that this movie, I think, is really, really important, and I think that it actually did resonate with so many people, aside from being well-directed and well-written. So Scream came out in 1996, and Columbine happened in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this movie, the more I watch it, and the more I watch two boys, two white upper middle class boys who have their whole lives ahead of them, but they decide they were wronged or slighted in some way and decide to kill high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk about like predicting, you know, and I listen to, so what I take notes on or what I have been taking notes on with something like that is like, listening to the Maureen Prescott story, because so much of that is delivered in dialogue or news reports or in passing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put it together, Maureen was raped.
Yeah.
It's a horribly
savage crime.
So when you know who has committed this crime.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah. They sexually assaulted Maureen. They killed her. Billy had been dating Sydney for 2 years.
Right.
And we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of this murder.
Oh my God.
So he had been playing this long game, or he learned about something and then decided. But like, this is a really savage, horrifying human being in Billy Loomis.
Yeah, he's terrifying.
And I think that that's really like, And the idea of I'm going to punish everyone because my mom left me.
Yeah.
You know, if you read anything about incels and what's going on in terms of like radicalization mm-hmm. of young, specifically white men
right.
on the internet. So much of it, you read, is dedicated to single moms, their feminization of men, and how their moms have ruined everything, whether mm-hmm. they stay, whether they go, whatever. And I was really struck last night when I hear Billy say, you know, my mom left me, so it's your mom's fault.
Right.
And now I'm going to make everyone suffer. And it's like...
Right.
That is
it's
so
terrifying.
But this is 1996. Like, oh my God. He, like, Kevin Williamson was so prolific.
I know.
In terms of these motivations, it is fascinating to me.
And even just now when you're talking about sort of real, because I wrote down in my notes, like, I was like, oh, this is very prescient in terms of like the toxic masculinity conversation
totally.
We're talking about, like, feeling entitled to sex.
Yep.
And the whole. Subplot about Sydney having sex or not, and like that's sort of played for, oh, she's not following the rules as the final girl, which is were set out in the 1970s, not even intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually asked both Jamie Lee Curtis and John Carpenter about final girl rules, and they're like, I don't know what you're talking
yeah.
about. And I'm like, no, let's talk about it. And they're just like, no, we weren't thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, it's so frustrating, but they were just like, yeah, we're just writing a character. But anyway, but the sex. And them not having sex or having sex and the way he pressures her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, hey, my mom was raped and murdered a year ago. I'm a 17-year-old girl. And nobody is – I was like – last night I was like, oh, my God. Her trauma is – everyone is re-traumatizing her all the time. And she has this great line where she's like, sorry, my traumatized life is an inconvenience for you. But, yeah, he's being denied sex. The fact that – her daughter's boyfriend rapes the mother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is insane. But yeah, it definitely is tapping into this like bubbling sense of whether it's entitled upper class kind of like masculinity or that kind of like, you know, it's intimate partner violence.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a domestic violence story. Even the climactic scene where it's the two of them and they're in the kitchen with Sydney. I'm mm-hmm. like, this is a domestic violence story.
Totally. Well, and I love the reveal that Stu doesn't know this. That to me is such a choice. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, Stu participates willingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll get to this in a minute, but I don't know how many he actually kills. I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I love the choice of Billy tells, you know, Sydney what was happening with her mother and the look on Matthew Lillard's face of like, whoa, what? Like, he has no, I mean, that is even more just like,
I know.
And it just says so much about Billy. The
yes.
idea that Billy is, you know, finds this, now don't, again, I am not saying that, oh, poor Stu, no, but you can see that Billy has been playing Stu this whole time.
Right.
And it's just this fascinating, like, whoa.
Well, it's also very Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold in the sense that Eric Harris was like the psychopath, the mastermind, and Dylan was the one who followed along.
Right.
And he was more depressive, suicidal, and Matthew Lillard is like, manic.
Party boy. Yeah. Love it. I love his. Can I just say, for a moment of levity, I love Matthew Lillard in this movie so much. And I was at a WGA screening in January of maybe 2017, I want to say. And Lillard did the Q&A with Kevin Williamson.
Oh, my gosh.
And they sat there and watched the movie and then did the Q&A.
Amazing.
So neither of them had seen the movie in so long. And Matthew Lillard actually was like, oh, my God. He said, he was like, I'm a little embarrassed because, wow, he just really let me go on that one. Like, it's so over the top. But
it's so over the top, but it somehow works.
It works.
And he's consistent the whole way through. Fun fact about Matthew Lillard being cast is that he was accompanying his then-girlfriend to an unrelated audition taking place in the same building. Casting director Lisa Beach saw him in the hallway and asked him to audition for the part. He got into the role with an incredible ferocity, quote-unquote, which I'm not surprised to hear
yeah.
at all. And then the other thing is that he famously ad-libbed, my parents are going to be so mad at me, or my mom and dad are going to be so mad at me, which is so funny. And it really does add, though, to the character kind of just going along on this like kooky scheme and being like, yeah, it's a movie. I'm going to do it like a movie. We watched a lot of movies and took notes.
Or we'll get away with it.
Right.
Because that's what it says to me. Like, the thing about Stu that's so interesting is, to me, it looks like, especially, I love that scene in the kitchen. Like, I love it so much. But it looks to me like Stu is really realizing for the first time, oh,
this is what we've done.
Wait a minute. Like, we're gonna get caught. Because in their heads, they're gonna walk out of that unscathed. In their heads, they're just going to keep living their lives.
And yeah, they think they're Michael Myers.
Yeah, but do they? Does
yeah.
Stu really think that?
Right, like, that's true.
I
yeah.
just, that is what is so, just, I really, like, my, it is so interesting, especially when we see young teenage boys doing what, committing violence on a regular basis.
Yeah, and this idea of, like, do they realize what the real consequences are?
Sure.
And do they, or you know, and this gets into the, like, one of the major questions of the film, which is, like, media affect, which is, like, do horror movies make people violent or no? You know, because I think that people could, like, people try to make those arguments all the time that, like, you know, oh, watching scary stuff, like, desensitizes people. Mm-hmm. And that was a very, like, 90s argument, like the video games argument. And also, and even the principal kind of gets into it. He at one point, he's, like, talking to the pranksters, and he's, like, desensitized.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting that there's this undercurrent of these kids have watched too many horror movies, and now they're all messed up.
That is a very Wes Craven thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wes gave interview after interview addressing this his entire career.
Yeah.
And it's fun, if any of you listening haven't seen Wes Craven's new Nightmare recently. It predates this movie by a couple of years. It sets the stage for Scream so... It is so meta. It is
amazing.
So, like, about movies
yeah.
and movies causing this and all of that stuff. And I think that, you know, what Billy even says is, don't blame the movies. You know, movies only make us more creative, which
right.
is a great line, but I think what Billy is saying is, like, Billy was gonna do this anyway.
He's a psychopath.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I do love that Wes, as a creator, does get to actually tackle that conversation.
Yeah, and I think that the conversation is tackled really well in that those lines of Billy's where he's like, no, this just gave me some ideas.
Right. And you see Randy, too, by the way,
yes,
who
exactly.
is harmless.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, it's so important to have those two different
yeah.
characters playing off each other. And by the way, I would love for you to program and host a new Nightmare Scream double
oh
feature.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Please.
Let's manifest that
Please
into the universe.
Please let me do that. Please, someone. Alamo Drafthouse, are
yeah.
you listening?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we will wrap up Scream when we come back.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Switchblade Sisters. We are talking about Scream with writer, actress, host, podcast host, Clark Wolf. I am Katie Walsh. And what's interesting about this movie is that it was such a huge marquee project for Dimension, which was the genre sub-label of Miramax.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, notoriously shepherded by Bob Weinstein and Harvey Weinstein. When I was reading up on the film, they tried to fire Wes Craven, like, multiple times over the dumbest things. They wanted to shoot it in Vancouver. Wes Craven wanted to shoot it in the States so that it looked very American. And they almost fired him over that. I was like, why would you fire Wes Craven over a location?
After they allegedly just hounded him and hounded him and hounded him to take the movie. Like, Wes passed on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, hound him, and then try to fire him throughout the whole process.
Right. And then, they tried to fire him again when they were looking at dailies and they didn't think it was scary enough. So then Wes Craven and editor Patrick Lussier, who went on to direct Dracula 2000, My Bloody Valentine, mm-hmm. Drive Angry, and Trick, they put together a work print. And so then they were like, okay, it'll be scary.
Yeah.
And then poor Wes Craven, like, had a time trying to get it not NC-17 rated.
Oh, my God.
I mean, had to, like, lie to the MPAA. He's like, oh, yeah, I only have one take of that. Sorry.
Yeah, the whole, Wes Craven, I think there's no love lost between him and the MPAA.
Right.
Like, I think they were the bane of his existence forever. But, yeah, man, the whole legacy of the Scream franchise and firing Wes Craven and firing Kevin Williamson,
mm-hmm.
and the Weinsteins just doing everything they can to make these two people's lives completely miserable. It's just wild to me.
Right.
And, you know, I wonder if, you know, I mean, Kevin Williamson he's got an incredible career still. But I do wonder now that the Weinsteins have fallen out of favor, if maybe he'll start being a little more candid,
right,
about just the process. Because you can watch these movies. I mean, obviously, like, Scream 2 has this history of, being written on set and things changing and
right.
just, like, so frantic. And honestly, I think it is a miracle that movie is as good as it is. I love Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
But 3, I hate. And allegedly, movie was taken away from, you know, Kevin Williamson and given to Aaron Kruger. And then to come back for Scream 4, allegedly, you know, Williamson had a whole nother trilogy planned and he was promised all these things. And then they did it again and took the movie away and gave it to Aaron Kruger. And you're just like, what is happening? I don't understand. I don't know how much of this is actually true. But
right.
Or what the process
it's
of it all is.
It's probably worse than we know.
It is. That's the thing that is so interesting to me. And I would just be. But yeah, the Weinsteins, bad for many reasons.
Right. And yeah, I mean, you always hear the notorious stories about Harvey Weinstein, but also that he would just, like, edit.
Oh, yeah.
The living shit out of movies beyond the director's wishes. And so many filmmakers are just like, ugh, screw him.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. But before we knew about all of the criminal acts he was doing, he was cutting movies to shit.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about how this movie was, like, super influential,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you becoming a budding horror enthusiast. But I'm curious, like, how it has kind of shaped what you do, or how just, like, discovering horror through this movie has, like, shaped, you know, your role in sort of talking about horror, acting in horror, writing horror. I mean, what are your thoughts on that and the way that it's, like, influenced your life?
It's actually been incredibly influential for many reasons. I would say I fell in love with horror as a teenager because I was always interested in the politics of horror.
Right.
And this was a movie that was a huge gateway into that. And thinking about genre and what scares you in a bigger way.
Right.
And then that led to more and more of an appreciation for the genre. Because I think even though now horror is booming, it's on TV year-round, it's in, you know, movies year round. Some of those movies go on to great acclaim. You know, even it's still a little bit of a you know, disrespected genre.
Right.
And
it's so amazing to me that people still are like, ew, no, horror.
Of course. I mean, but I think it's because people, this is my true belief, a lot of people, most people, do not like to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They do not like to look at things that make them uneasy. And when you're talking about teen boys killing their classmates, that sucks. That's not fun to watch. When you're talking about, you know, alcoholism in The Shining, you know, when
yeah.
you're talking about, the list goes on and on and on. So I think that's why those movies, these certain horror movies, resonate and do become, like, cultural phenomenons and kind of have broad appeal, is that they're talking about things that are bigger picture issues.
Right.
But so that was a big introduction to me that led into studying horror academically as a film student, which led into writing about horror, mm-hmm. which allowed me to find my first internship in Los Angeles, which allowed me to, you know, when I met Ryan Turek and he invited me to co-host the Bloodcast with him, mm-hmm. you know, that led to, like, you know what I'm saying? So like this movie and understanding that there is more to horror than what necessarily meets the eye opened up so much for me.
Yeah.
And in terms of now, mm-hmm. you know, I, as I am writing more, structurally and treating the audience with respect and treating the audience as though they are smart, but also being one step ahead, to me, those are the things that I try to take away from that I love about this movie that have influenced me as a writer.
You know, you talking about sort of like how do we deal with the death of teenagers when we're constantly, you know, experiencing the tragedy of the death of teenagers also ties back to Scream because of the news element.
Yes.
And the way in which Gale Weathers and these really aggressive news personalities who are sort of in the like Geraldo mm-hmm. mode of like chasing after people and like shoving microphones in their face. But I mean, that in the 90s, that was the way news was. These like scandalous, that was like, you know, bad news was these like scandalous news magazine programs like searching for tabloidish kind of stories and even Gale's book and speculation about who did what. And you know, that the film is really playing on these ideas of like how violence is mediated in news media. And it's interesting to think about like how that's changed now and how we consume news now. And it's not the Gale Weathers model, but it's like the constant Twitter model or news notifications model and like what that does to our psyches and how we experience real world violence.
Yeah, and there is a performative nature to Gale, which I love. So the idea that there's the duality to her of she presents, she even says it, tacky, sleazy tabloid journalist, which by the way, I cannot say how much I love Courtney Cox in this role.
She's so good.
Like, she is so, every time I watch, and to think that she was just on Friends where she's playing this, like, or meaning she had had one or two seasons of Friends where she's playing this very specific character, and then to just turn around and do this, you know, she's so underrated, but in this one in particular. But I love that she says, you know, like, I don't think Cotton's guilty.
Yeah.
And I stand by that. And, you know,
and
yeah.
she says it based on evidence.
That's
and
exactly.
testimony.
And research.
Yes.
So I love that. And I also think that, you know, I would say the performative nature of on camera hosts or journalists reporting what they think is going to get a rise out of people, but also believing something differently behind the scenes is quite prolific.
Yeah, no, it anticipates the clickbait. Journalism, you know, it's like Kevin Williamson was just like telling us what our world was going to be.
Yeah.
While also commenting on the world that we lived in.
Yeah. I mean, talking heads and like the idea of like, you know, crazy and sensational on camera. But then if you talk to them behind the scenes, they actually have a good head on. You know, they know what they're doing is performative and nonsense. And it's like, conflating that with news mm-hmm. is something that I think is very prolific.
I love when there's a different host after Sydney punches
yes.
Gale, and it's the next day, and this host runs up to her. This is a high school student. Runs up to her, shoves a microphone in her face, and it says,
"So how does it feel to be almost brutally butchered?"
Hey, leave her alone.
People want to know. They have a right to know.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
Do you know who that was?
Who was it?
Linda Blair.
No, my God.
That was Linda Blair.
I didn't realize
yeah.
that.
Yeah. What does it feel like to be almost brutally butchered? Yeah.
Yes, brutally butchered.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but also think about, you're right. You're right to bring up Twitter. I mean, the difference is that now you have thousands of people finding these kids who are survivors and tweeting at them.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh my.
Like, at least Linda Blair is, like, polite about it, you know? Where now on social media, it's, like, 1,000 Linda Blairs being
oh
like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
I mean, it's, insane.
Oh my God.
It's insane. But anyway, what I was going to say is last night while I was watching this movie, I absolutely Googled lime green skirt suit because I am being Gale Weathers for Halloween next
year. Let's get a group.
Yes.
Because I really want to be Casey. I was like, I'm going to be Casey Becker. I'm going to get a phone.
It's so good.
And a wig.
I will have to show you. One of my girlfriends did Casey. Oh. Did a Scream thing. And
amazing.
They were, it was
okay.
So good.
Whoever wants to be in our
open call
Scream 2020 Halloween costume,
yes.
We're going to have a Billy.
Oh,
we're
going
to have a Stu. We're going to have a Randy. We're going to have a Ghostface. It's going to be amazing.
Yep. A Kenny.
Any last thoughts on Scream before we wrap up?
Yes. I did want to point out that I love the choice to set this to show us that these houses are all kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So like the opening scene, you know, you see the long drive in for Casey. And then when Sydney's home alone, you see that gorgeous shot where she's out on the patio and it just overlooks all the hills.
Yeah.
Like these kids are so, and then Stu's house, of course, like so isolated. I think that's so brilliant and scary.
Yeah.
And then there were a couple of lines that I just wanted to point out that I think are amazing. One of them is, there's always some stupid bullshit reason to kill your girlfriend.
Yes.
Randy says that. And it's just like, yes, you're right.
Amen. I love that scene in the video store.
Oh my God. It is excellent.
I love when the girl walks up and she's like, what's the werewolf movie with E.T.'s mom?
Yeah, exactly. That one. And then, of course, like at the very end of that exchange between Randy and Stu and Billy, Randy like looks at Stu and goes, tell me that's not a killer. I do love how there is no subtlety to Skeet Ulrich at all. And yet we still believe what we see. And that is so great, you know?
I was thinking about this, like, the amount of times that he has to protest that he's not the killer to Sydney is insane. If, like, girls, if your boyfriend keeps having to tell you that he did not try to murder you, he tried to murder you.
I mean, yeah. And you know what's so funny is that Sydney actually says in the grocery, to your point, in the grocery store to Tatum, whenever he touches me, I can't relax. But then she goes, oh, but it's my fault because I messed up. And you're just like, no, girl, that's your gut.
I know.
You know, that is your intuition.
Yeah.
But I also love, Randy tells you everything you need to know in that video scene.
Yes.
I actually wrote this down. He also says maybe Sydney wouldn't have sex with him for motive.
Yes.
I'm telling you, dad's a red herring. It's Billy.
I love that too. And I love that Kevin Williamson just openly puts all of this structural analysis and like into just on the surface.
Yep.
It's so smart.
It's so smart. And then essentially, again, he you have to have a master craftsman in your script and in your direction to tell you all of this and show you all of this. And you still go, well, it can't be Billy because the police said.
Right.
It can't be Billy because this.
Right.
Even though you're like, no, it's totally Billy. And I think that's really indicative of us and our like true, you know, like I think that's really indicative of us as especially, I can't speak for all women, but some women who are like, no, it's me. It's me. It's me.
Gaslighting. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The last line that I want to point out is, and it struck me when I watched it last night and it struck me when I watched it earlier this year and took notes was Dewey. Says, don't worry, Sid. It's school. You'll be safe here.
Oh, God.
I mean, sorry to be a downer, guys, but like talk about things that have not aged well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That is so ironic. I love it.
That and cellular.
Cellular. Well, Clark, this was the best conversation.
No.
I had so much fun talking to you. So thank you for coming on the podcast and thank you for picking Scream.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for letting me pick Scream and for inviting me.
Is there anything you want to share, you know, promote?
Yeah. If you guys enjoyed this, you know, deep dive into a pop movie, I have a podcast. It's currently on hiatus, but there's 2 seasons worth of content.
Yeah, check it out.
So it's a total of 60 episodes. And the show is called Sending, S-E-N-D-I-N-G, The Wolf, like the Pulp fiction line. My guest picks a movie off of any AFI list, and we talk about it, and then they get to add a movie to the list, and we talk about that. It's really fun.
Cool.
I have an incredible roster of guests, directors, writers, actors, all of it. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Clark Wolf, Clark with an E, Wolf with an E.
Yay. Thank you so much, Clark, and thank you all for listening. Thank you for listening to Switchblade Sisters with me, Katie Walsh. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to let us know what you think of the show, you can tweet us at SwitchbladePod or email us at SwitchbladeSisters@MaximumFun.org. Please check out our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/SwitchbladeSisters. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org.
I'll be right back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.